Kurt Kleinman lives in Pompton Plains, New Jersey, and has been married for 61 years. The military veteran had a very successful career in pharmacy and was a longtime ski instructor. But how Kurt got to the U.S. and what his family went through is the subject of the new book from Jeremy Dronefield, The Stone Crusher, the true story of a father and son's fight for survival in Auschwitz. Kurt's father, Gustav, a Jewish upholsterer in Vienna, Austria, was arrested by the SS in 1939. Gustav, who kept a secret diary that much of the book is based on, and his 16-year-old son, Fritz, survived four concentration camps, including Buchenwald and Auschwitz, over a six-year period. Gustav's wife, Tini, fought to save her children at that time. Tini sent her eldest daughter, Edith, to England in 1939 to work as a maid. With the help of the Jewish Children's Aid Organization in New York, Kurt was sent to America. But Tini wasn't able to get her teenage daughter, Herta, out of Vienna. In 1942, Tini and Herta were arrested by the Nazis and sent with thousands of other Austrian Jews to a death camp near Minsk. Their family and friends never saw them again. Now 88, Kurt Kleinman is reading about his family in The Stone Crusher. I went to his Pompton Plains home for Kurt's first interview since the book has been published by Chicago Review Press. Eventually, Kurt's wife, Diane, will join us. Kurt, pleasure, and thanks for letting us come into your home today.
Thank you for being here.
And in this book, you were a little boy, 8 when we first meet you in the book, and everyone seems to not be quite sure what's happening, but know that Nazi suppression is starting to build around Vienna. Can you take us back to your early remembrances of what it was like being in Vienna at that time?
Well, even before that, Vienna was a beautiful upbringing for me. We were kids. We lived across the street from a market, and our life was the area. My brother was 7 years older than me, so he had his older group. We had our younger group on the market. We played there, and our activities were great. Hitler came in 38, and I remember it distinctly because my brother was on the street that the night the change came. And the interesting thing, when he came home that night, what he was talking about, in the beginning, the people were throwing stones at the German soldiers. Within 24 hours, everybody was yelling Heil Hitler.
Your father, Gustav, your mother, Tini, your sisters, Edith and Herta, and your brother, Fritz. This is a story about all of the members of your family, but it talks about how Gustav, your father, and your brother Fritz were arrested in 1939. That's the first real separation that you had. Tell us about that.
Well, the Nazis came to the house and were looking for my father. I mean, I remember that both those days. And he wasn't home. As a result of that, they said, we'll take your son, and if he turns himself in, we'll let your son go. My father came home, heard about that, and said, I'm going to the police station. And my mother said, don't do it, get out of the house. He decided anyway to go to the police station, which was a couple of blocks away, and there must have been an Austrian policeman at the front door who asked him, why are you here? And he explained it, and fortunately the guy said, get the hell out of here. He came home, and when he came home, he says, I'm going back tomorrow. And my mother said, and this I remember very specifically, she says, get out of the house. If you don't get out of the house, I'll turn on the gas. Eventually, he went out of the house, but he came home that evening because I guess he didn't want us alone in the house and that sort of thing. And the Nazis, with neighbors who were our friends, pointing our apartment out to them, and they came at 2 to 3 o'clock in the morning and took my father.
And so that was obviously a very emotional time for you. But let's talk first of all about this family of yours. It's a story of love, courage, survival, strength, even luck. Did you know you had a special family growing up there?
I knew my father was a hardworking guy. I always said my mother didn't pay that much attention. In other words, today, mothers are very careful of their children. as soon as we were 6 or 7 years old, we were outside the house playing. On a weekend, my mother would make sandwiches. My gang would get together, and there was the question, okay, who's the leader today, and where are we going to go? Are we going to go to a park? Are we going to go hiking? Are we going to go swimming in the Danube Canal? Nobody looked after us. I remember jumping. I didn't know how to swim, and the guys tied a rope around my stomach, and I jumped in the Danube Canal, and they walked on the bank holding the rope. I didn't know how to swim. I even remember taking an inner tube and getting into it and being out in the middle of the Danube Canal, and all of a sudden the tide was too strong and I couldn't get back. And I always kidded, they had to come after me or I would have ended up in Budapest.
Even though the story focuses a lot on your father and your brother's survival from not only from Buchenwald, but also Auschwitz, amazing stories here. I want to first focus on your mother, who went to Minsk along with your sister and was never heard of again, and of all the atrocities that happened there. And you're just reading the book as we speak. What goes through your mind when you are reading about your mom and really finding out even more details, I guess, about how she passed away?
Well, the first that I knew, obviously, when we got letters from Vienna that my mother was killed and so on. But then my brothers, the Nazis kept records of everything, and he found the manifest of the women on the train, and I saw the list of my mother and my sister on that list. So I knew they were killed, and I always said they were murdered there. But I had no idea how. It wasn't until I read the book and how Jeremy Dronefield felt that they were killed when they got to Minsk. The other sort of interesting thing was, after I retired from Montefiore Medical Center as director of pharmacy, the president of Montefiore, who had also retired at that time, was the medical director for the Joint Distribution Committee. And he invited me to join as a pharmacy consultant. And somehow there was a need for me to go to Minsk to take a look at the pharmaceutical needs of the elderly people there. So Diane and I were able to go to Minsk, and I was able to see exactly where they were killed. But I had no idea of how until I read the story in the book. And obviously when I did, it hit me like a brick on my head.
We talk about your mother, Tini. She gave you life when you were born. She gave you a new life when she was able to arrange for you to come to the United States as a young boy. Tell us about the trip over. Tell us about how that all worked out. She really had to pull a lot of strings and really be attentive to detail to get you to come to the United States to avoid what was happening there in Vienna.
Well, her whole thing was to save her children. And she was very upset that she could not save my brother, who was by now in the concentration camp. And as a result of that, she was looking at any way possible. She was able to arrange to get my sister to England and work as a maid. And in order to do that, the irony was, in those days, to get accepted and get a visa, you had to have papers to prove that you were a domestic. And so she arranged with a prominent Jewish family to give her training as a maid. She worked for them for a month, and then they gave her papers that she worked for them for 6 months. And as a result of that, she got to England in 1939. The other thing my mother did, she had a friend who worked with her in her early days and was also at a wedding, who had moved to the United States and got married to a fellow in the United States. She wrote to her and said, is there anything you can do to help us? The friend went to her husband. The husband said, wait a minute, let me go to my attorney. And the attorney happened to be Judge Samuel Barnett. And he spoke to them. As a result of that, Judge Barnett and his brother Philip sent the family affidavits and sponsored us to come to the United States. My assumption is that while that was happening, my father and my brother got arrested, and somehow we were not able to use those papers. somehow my mother was able to get me on, accepted by the German Jewish Children Aid Society that was trying to send children to the United States. By the way, the records show there were roughly 1,000 children that the United States accepted unaccompanied between 1934 and 1945. As a result of that, somehow she got me accepted to come to the United States. The best that I knew, when I came to the United States, I saw papers in my file, and it indicated I was supposed to go to a family either in Delaware that was willing to accept me, or a family in Connecticut. But somehow Judge Barnett learned that I was coming, approached the society, and said, "We sent this family affidavits, and I would like this little boy to come live with us." And that is the result of how I ended up in New Bedford, Massachusetts, with the Barnett family.
And you have some wonderful photos here. When you arrived, you became a star. This isn't your first interview. This isn't the first time you'll be photographed. This isn't the first time that you were in the newspaper or anything like that. You're looking at a photo here. Describe it for our listeners.
Well, the photo is a picture of my Aunt Sarah, she almost ended up as my surrogate mother. As a matter of fact, I ended up in New Bedford with a new father, Judge Barnett, and then three other mothers, Aunt Sarah, Aunt Kate, and Aunt Esther. And I always said, those three never let me get away with anyway. I could no longer be the Spitzbub in Vienna, which meant the little difficult kid. And I had to behave because this was a very prominent family and I couldn't do anything that would disparage them and so on. So I had to behave and do everything that was asked of me. In the picture, you see Aunt Sarah with me sitting on her right knee and David Barnett, who was her nephew, 3 years old at the time, sitting on the left knee. David and his father, Philip Barnett, and his sister, Rebecca, who was only 1 year old at the time, lived next door to Judge Barnett. So it was almost like a combined household, and the kids were back and forth. I have a vivid memory of arriving in New Bedford. I must have been exhausted, and I went to sleep. And by the way, it's the first time I had my own room, my own bed, and I'm waking up in the morning, and there was this little boy standing at my bed, and he's jabbering. And obviously, I have no idea what he's saying because I don't speak English. And I don't know how to answer him, and so I don't. And eventually, he started crying and saying, "Kurt won't speak to me." And so that's how I got to know David, and he ended up to being almost like my little brother.
As you speak, you're smiling and you're beaming about this new life that you have in the United States while so many horrific things were happening with your family. Obviously, you can't even comprehend that as a young boy, can you? What was actually going on in Vienna while you're in the U.S.?
Somehow, I have a feeling there were certain emotions in me. I don't really remember crying or anything like that. But my gathering is my first 6 months must have been somewhat difficult. On the other hand, the family was so loving and caring. And the other thing, they were the founders of a Jewish boys camp, Camp Avoda, in Middleborough, Massachusetts. And that summer, I was only in the United States for, 3 months? And off they sent me to camp. I don't know how much English I knew at the time, but I have no memory of anybody ever picking on me. So I guess playing ball, learning how to play baseball and everything else, and being accepted by everybody around me must have been a wonderful experience, and that sort of helped me forget some of the many difficult situations that I experienced in Vienna.
This book is about two different things. This book is about so many people helping each other, but also in Vienna, some of the people that were their friends turned on them.
Not only their friends, there was a woman that worked for my father, and they pointed out the family. There's the story in the book of a guy who used to be a friend of my sister recognizing her and pointing her out, and she ended up having to scrub the cement right there with a brush and soap and water because he pointed her out as being Jewish and so on. These were the people, and within 24 hours, as I said, they became ardent Nazis, and maybe not all of them, because there were people in Vienna, even as you read the book, who helped my father while he was in the camp and would send him food and some other things. So it wasn't everyone, but a large majority of them. Immediately, everybody was Heil Hitler, and they became ardent Nazis right away.
We're speaking with Kurt Kleiman, who was the young son in this book, The Stone Crusher, the true story of a father and son's fight for survival in Auschwitz, his father and his older brother surviving not only Buchenwald, but Auschwitz, and both lived to a very long life. Gustav died in 1976 at the age of 84, and Fritz died in 2009 at the age of 85. And your sister Edith, who you mentioned went to England before you actually came to the United States, died not long ago at the age of 96. There was something inside that the world needed to know from this family, don't you think?
I think very much, particularly even now, 70 years after all of this happened. And you hear about the Holocaust deniers and so on. And I think there is a need to keep documenting these things, to throw this in their faces and say, yes, these things really happened, and we've got to make certain that these things do not happen again.
What's the biggest thing about the Holocaust that makes you angry when it comes to these denials? What goes through your mind, what goes through your heart when you hear these people talk about this?
It's almost difficult to describe, you know, the feeling that goes through you when you hear them talking about it, how they could deny it, when you're not only talking about one family, but you're talking about the record shows 6 million, you know, were killed and so on. But when you read the story and you read the torture and how fortunate and maybe lucky, or the bonding of my father and brother through four camps that helped them survive. It's just amazing, and the luck of the draw, I guess. There's a story in the book of how my brother almost died, and the only way he lived, they changed his number to a guy that died and put his name on the guy that died, and then hid him away until he could be moved back into the camp with the rest of the inmates and so on.
The notorious butcher of Block 11 was the person. Maximilian Grabner was the one, the Gestapo officer, who had beaten your brother to near death and forced him to, as you mentioned, swap his identity with a dead man in order to survive. There are so many stories that we still have to talk about in the book about how they were able to survive the death camps and the concentration camps. But I want, since I'm here with you, Kurt, I want to talk about some of the more of the stories about you, and I want to talk about a harmonica. I want to talk about the word harmonica. What does that mean for you? And tell us the story about the harmonica.
Well, I always enjoyed playing a harmonica, and of course my memory is, when it's time for me to leave, my mother sits me on the kitchen table, and the whole thing is, Kurt, behave yourself. You're leaving. Be good wherever you are so they'll like you and all that. And then as a going away present, she gives me a beautiful harmonica. And the unfortunate thing is I also have a memory. I'm on the train from Berlin to Lisbon, and unfortunately, the train got stopped, and we got off the train, and somehow some of the soldiers got with me and the kids, and they saw I had a harmonica, and they were playing with it and so on. But unfortunately, they never gave it back to me, and I lost the only thing my mother gave me at that point. So that was a terrific loss, obviously, because that was my memory of my mother.
Yeah, it was the last physical thing that she handed to you.
Yeah. It was not only the last physical thing. The unfortunate part was it's the last memory I have of my mother. Of some of the things I do remember, I have no memory of her and my sister saying goodbye. I have no memory of how I got to the train, and I have no memory of how I got from Vienna to Berlin to pick up additional papers. But then my memory comes in, and I have good memory on my train ride from Berlin to Lisbon, and the kids playing, and I met two other children on the train, and we were running up and down the train. And then we were together in Lisbon for 4 weeks before the ship was getting ready to sail. So I have wonderful, you know, tragic memories of the travel on that train and the interaction with the kids and the difficulty of multi of us sitting in one cabinet crammed into that room and so on, that making it difficult for us. But I have memories of that, but I have absolutely no memory of saying goodbye to my mother or my sister or how I got on the train in Vienna.
But Kurt Kleiman does remember one of the things that he loved to do with his mother, and that was cook, whether it be pancakes or Wiener Schnitzel. Tell us about that.
You got to remember, I was the baby in the family. And so as a result of that, I used to help my mother cook. And one of the things she made was schnitzel, which every knows is the Viennese veal. And she taught me how to do that. And everyone knows that you get the breadcrumbs and the coating on the veal. Well, the thing that she did, she always dipped it twice in the egg batter and then in the meal. And as a result, you got a better coating of it. And so I always remember that. And later on, when I got married, I taught my wife how to do that same thing.
We're speaking with Kurt Kleiman, along with his wife, Diane, here in their home in Pompton Plains. And we're talking about the book by Jeremy Dronfield, The Stone Crusher, the true story of a father and son's fight for survival in Auschwitz. And Kurt is a young boy when this story takes place, the true story of his family. So let's talk about the struggles that were taking place for your family when it came to the camps and the concentration camps. Now, your brother always wanted, as you told me, always wanted to write a book about what had taken place, but it actually starts with your father, Gustav, keeping a secret diary, something that could have had him killed should anybody had found that he was keeping a diary. When was your first knowledge that you knew that he kept a diary?
I'm not quite certain whether I learned of it when I first met him serving in the military in Germany. But I knew there was a diary, and my feeling... But the other thing that happened is when I first came, here I'm an American soldier dressed in uniform, and my brother at the time, if you read the book, was saved by some of the other Jews in the camp who had communistic leanings, socialistic leanings for a while, and they took care of him as a young man trying to save the younger people. As a result of that, he had that type of leaning when I first got to Vienna. So as a result of that, my father said very simply, no politics in the house. And as a result of that, we never discussed it. And eventually, I got to know my brother, and things changed in his mind regarding Russia and so on. And we eventually developed a very close, once again, friendly relationship as he was my older brother, and how he was when I was first in Vienna growing up.
Now, your father, you have the actual translation of your father's diary with you here on the table today. I would imagine it's so difficult to really go over what took place at those camps.
Well, the first that I really knew the details was when I had the book translated into English, both his diary and then my brother's book. I really had no knowledge of that. So when you read that and you hear the things that they went through and how they survived and the associations they had with the other inmates, how my father was made a sort of supervisor and was fortunate in many other ways, how my brother was tortured, how my father, there were accidents when some of the work they were doing with the logs and the stones, that he got injured and ended up in the infirmary and a hospital there. And the indication was always that if you got hurt and you ended up in the hospital, sooner or later you were going to put to death. There was no way you could survive. So reading how they overcame any of those obstacles, it's really a miracle. And if you read, he wrote a poem, and the poem that he wrote, I never could imagine that my father was capable of writing that kind of poem. I always thought of him as a hard-working individual, as an upholsterer. But when you read that poem, it's an amazing poem, and I've always wanted it published side by side, English versus the German, because if you read the German rhymes, and to some degree, the English rhymes. It's just outstanding when you read it.
Not only was your father, Gustav, a fine upholsterer, but he was also a war hero as well.
Yes, he was. Some of that I learned later because I don't ever remember him talking about his war years. But later on, not only was he a hero and so on, he had the newspaper clippings from those days. And he and another guy who was only they were both only corporals at the time, did something to get whatever the silver award was in World War II, and he was decorated in World War II. And as a result of that, I did not know that he had been arrested in 1938 with my brother, but released. And he was released because he was a war hero in World War I. I don't remember that part of the story, and I don't think I ever remembered that he was arrested in 1938. But then, unfortunately, he was arrested again in 1939 and never released.
One of the amazing parts, and it really tells what this Kleiman family was all about, was your brother's decision to follow his father to Auschwitz, knowing full well what was probably going to happen there. Did not want to be separated from your father. A true act of love, a true act of selflessness. Just so close with his father that he didn't want to let him go.
Well, the thing happened was they're both in Buchenwald, and all of a sudden he learns that my father is being transferred to Auschwitz. And they had a fairly decent idea of what Auschwitz was all about. And he went and he says, I've got to go with my father, even though the other inmates who were friendly with him told him, you're stupid, don't go. Look what's going to happen and that sort of thing. If you want to live, you've got to forget your father. And he just said, there is no way I can forget my father. And I have a feeling it's that bonding when you read the remarks from my father of being so joyous that his son is going with him and they were together. And for many years during the Auschwitz days, they had a togetherness. There were times when they were separated, but I think it was that bonding as well as courage and spirit and luck is what else helped save them.
Both your father and your brother, Fritz, somehow had this incredible strength, even after being beaten or after hard labor. They both helped build what was the Buchenwald concentration camp, clearing areas and building that before they were transferred to Auschwitz. Where did that strength come from?
To be honest with you, I really don't know. Whether it was both my brother and I growing up across on the market and the way we were as kids growing up together, but his spirit and the things that he did, it's almost tough to comprehend.
I wanted to ask Diane, if I could, tell me about this man who's sitting across the table from you. It's such an amazing story about the Kleinman family. What is he like? What does he have these same qualities that we actually see in the book?
I'm crossing my fingers that the answer is going to be good.
Yes, he does have these qualities. And just to go back to talking about food, he makes me once a week pancakes, and he makes me oatmeal twice a week. I didn't know he was a chef, but he's good, and it's really good at it. And I know that his work as hospital pharmacist director, he was very successful and looked up to, and he won awards for being strong and consistent in his work.
So as you read The Stone Crusher, did it bring you even closer to Kurt?
I can't get much closer than I already am. Yeah, because I had met his father and his brother. We've been very close.
You're listening to the WBGO Journal. I'm Doug Doyle. We're talking about the new book, The Stone Crusher, the true story of a father and son's fight for survival in Auschwitz. The father and brother of Kurt Kleinman, who now lives in Pompton Plains with his wife, Diane. And we're talking about the author now, Jeremy Dronefield. How did he get the story?
It was his co-author who encouraged my brother, to give a testimonial at Auschwitz. And I think that togetherness, going through that experience, developed into writing the book together. Somehow, Jeremy Dronefield must have made contact with the co-author and learned about the story. And by that time, they had, obviously the book had been written, and by that time they also had a copy of the English translation, which I sent to them in Vienna, in Innsbruck rather. And as a result of that, he got interested in the story, and I learned that Jeremy is the sort of individual that takes other people's stories and is able to put it into a beautiful writing. He's an author, a historian, he's a ghostwriter. And as a result of that, he got interested in the story and decided to put a draft together and submitted it. And when it was accepted by the publisher, put that into a full draft of the book.
He did an amazing job of telling a story of a family, but yet really giving a history lesson to everybody, too, as he was able to mold in the chapters of things that were going on in the U.S. for you, with your sister in England, what had taken place with your mother and your other sister in Minsk, and what was going on with Gustav, your father, and your brother Fritz. The book is published, by the way, by Chicago Review Press. Your brother actually, at one point, jumped off the train that was headed to certain death, where your father was not well enough to try to escape. He escaped, but then was actually captured again. Can you tell us a little bit about that whole thing? Because I'm reading it, and I'm saying, oh, great, he was able to escape, and then it wasn't more than a couple pages other in the book and that he was back in custody.
Well, obviously, when the Russians were moving west, the Nazis all took the inmates from the camp, put them on trains, or marched them back east. And as a result of that, both my father and brother were together on the cattle train. And again, my brother had the instincts, and they already had civilian clothes underneath their prison uniforms. And he was talking to my father that before anything worse happened to them, they needed to escape. My father said, according to what I'm reading in the book, and also the stories he told me when I used to visit almost every other year in Vienna and really got to know him very well. And he's telling me that my father said, I'm too old, I'm too tired, I don't think I can make it. Go ahead, you try, and if you make it, make your way back to Vienna, and somehow, if I make it, we'll get together there. my brother somehow jumps off the train, survives, and then unfortunately he's in this little village. This is where he does tell me the story besides what's in the book. And he decides to take a train from that village to back to Vienna. But unfortunately, he makes a big mistake. The train that comes in is a troop train. As a result of that, as he gets on the train, they obviously ask him for papers, and he doesn't have any. And at this point, the story that he tells me is almost pathetically funny in a way, because it's a German soldier is asking him for his papers, and he doesn't have any. So he says, well, where do you live? And he makes up a story that he lives in some village, and then he decides, they say, well, what street? And he decides that every village must have a Hitlerplatz. So he says, Hitlerplatz number such and such. Well, the Nazis check out the address, and obviously there is no such address. So now they're trying to figure out who is he. And in their minds it comes up, you must be Jewish. So he pulls up his sleeve and he shows that there is no number. Well, fortunately what he did, he lifted up the sleeve of his right hand, the number was on his left hand. And he says, see, I'm not Jewish. And then to verify that, he starts to pull down his pants to show that he's not circumcised. Well, obviously he was, but the German soldier was embarrassed and he says, put on your pants. So now they've realized and said, all right, you're not Jewish, you must be a deserter.
Or a spy.
At that point then, the other thought they had, you might be an English spy who got parachuted into Germany. And so they're trying to figure out, and they ask him again, where do you live? And again, he gives them another name and a number. And as a result, they can't figure it out. And so by this time, they get so upset with him, they arrest him, and they put him into a jail cell. And the irony is, he's got his own bed, he's got warm blankets, and he writes in the book that was probably some of the better times that he's had, and they even gave him breakfast and sent. But then, unfortunately, as a result of that, they arrest him, but they think he's a deserter, as an Aryan deserter, and he ends up in Mauthausen, where, unfortunately, at that point, he has already gone through horrible situations, almost died, and now almost dies a second time in Mauthausen.
Another part of the amazing tale of the Kleiman family is that your father and older brother were able to reconnect so many times during so many unbelievable situations to be able to stay connected and to see each other again. And the embrace that happened the one time when your father actually saw this figure and it was like, oh, there he is, it's Fritz. You get the sense of fate coming through here that these two individuals were going to make it no matter what.
Well, it's not only fate, it's the bonding of the two of them. And if you read some of the words from my father, that you see in the diary, the way he expresses the relationship between my brother and him and the joy that he experienced them, and I have a feeling that gave them both the strength. On the other hand, my brother was, in a sense, a rascal, and even within the camp, he tried a number of things, and I think if you read the book, you all of a sudden learn the story that somehow we managed to get guns into the camp. So there are many things that he did during the time and working with resistance and so on. It's amazing some of the things that he did.
Both Fritz and your father had guts. They had a lot of guts because they did things that could have got them killed at any moment. The diary for your dad, the fact that Fritz, you know, was talking with people and planning escapes, and as you mentioned, bringing guns into the camp. You're reading this and you go, he took so many chances and the likelihood of him surviving is truly amazing. So let's talk about now that you know that your sister Edith went to England, got married, that your father and your brother Fritz survived the Holocaust, 6-year ordeal, going through 4 camps, as you mentioned. When you hear anybody, movies out, when Steven Spielberg came out with Schindler's List, and did you watch those, or would it have been too difficult for you to watch anything that has to do with the Holocaust?
Not only did I watch it, I've learned I have a need to see anything about World War II or anything about the Nazis and so on. So anytime there is anything on TV and so on, I not only watch the movies, but I watch the stories or I read as many stories that I can. I just have a feeling that I have a need. I have a need to understand and learn about these things and then obviously recognize how fortunate I was that at least part of my family lived through the whole situation.
Have you and Diane visited the Holocaust Memorial in D.C.?
We visited the Holocaust Memorial. Not only did we visit, my brother, well, first of all, my father did visit the United States in 1966, and he met my foster family. My brother visited in 1994, and at that time, we did go to the Holocaust Museum. And very interesting, if you walk into the Holocaust Museum, at one of the entrances as you walk in, there's a full wall picture of Auschwitz with a guy in the picture. And while we were there, he walks in that room, sees the picture, goes to the wall, points to the guy in the picture, and mentions his name. He recognizes the guy in the picture.
Wow. What were your thoughts of the Holocaust Memorial, the museum there, Diane, when you went through with your husband?
Well, it was very striking. It's hard to talk about what I remember, in all honesty.
Now that this book is out and that people are going to read more about your family, is there a sense of, well, I don't know, you tell me. What do you think now that more people will learn about the Kleinman family?
Well, my hope and feeling is it's not only learning about the Kleinman family, but reiterating again the experience of the Jews during the Holocaust era. And I think recognizing that these things did really happen and that we all have to live together, that these things do not happen again. Unfortunately, there is so much going on in the world that some of these situations are happening these days on a smaller scale, and we still have to do things to prevent these things from happening.
I'll give you an indication how this book, The Stone Crusher, can spark interest. On my way into the complex today was the guard at the gate. And she said, "Who are you here to see?" And I said, "Kurt Kleinman." And she goes, "Oh, you're a member of the press. What are you doing?" I said, "I'm here to interview him. His family story is in this book." And I lifted it and I showed her and I told her. And she said, "Oh my, I have to read that book."
Well, not only her, but fortunately, we've made a number of excellent friends here. And as soon as they heard the story or read my brother's original translation of the book, they immediately went ahead and bought the book, The Stone Crusher. And interestingly, one of a recent resident that we met, and we've become very good friends, and we're having dinner tonight with her, as a matter of fact. She was the first one who had the book. I didn't even have it. And so her book arrived before any of us ever had it. So it was interesting, as our friends are reading the book, and obviously as we're having dinner with many of them every evening, they all keep mentioning some of the stories and asking me questions about it, and particularly about the relationship of my mother to me.
Yeah, I think that's that was the most emotional thing about the whole story is what your mother did for her children and wasn't able to do for Herta, even though she wanted to so desperately to save her daughter, able to save Edith and you. She obviously was an amazing woman, and there's a photo of the entire family that's sitting here on the table. I want to find out why that picture is still around, but if you read the book, as Kurt mentions, you find out that your mom, Teeny, had a sense that this was around the time in 1938 that this family might not be together for very long as a unit. And all six of you are in this fabulous picture, and you're in a sailor suit in this photo. Tell me about the picture, and tell me about how it survived.
I don't really know how that picture survived, but I always had that picture. Either my brother sent it to me, or my mother sent it to me. Because, by the way, I did when I arrived in 1941 in March. And for the first 3 to 4 months, I was getting letters from my mother. The interesting thing is, after a while, I couldn't read the German, but I did eventually have them translated. But at any rate, my mother had this feeling, and her goal was thinking that, God forbid something to happen, let's have a picture of the family before we get separated. And somehow she got all of us dressed up. I don't know. I can't remember that sailor suit, whether wearing it before that or anything else. But we all got dressed up. And I always felt my sisters were beautiful girls. And so they were always very attractive. And we had that picture taken.
It's a beautiful photo of you and your family at that time in 1938. One of the letters that you got from your mother is the subject of one of the chapters called A Thousand Kisses, because that's how she signed off to you.
Well, she always wrote the letter, and in every letter, please, Kurt, behave yourself, be good, be sure that your uncle thinks the best of you. And then she describes how when she was young, she was, as a matter of fact, at that particular time that she writes, that she had just received a letter from me that I had written while I was at the camp that I had mentioned earlier. And so she started talking about how when in her early days she was at camp and she was a counselor and that everybody thought very well of her and she learned how to row and all that sort of thing. And then she says, you know, when you get too hot, be careful that you don't drink too much water. So she's giving me advice. But that's the way she was.
A true mom. Obviously, Diane, I would think that Teeny would be extremely proud of how her son, Kurt, turned out.
Absolutely. Her son turned out to be a great success, a great father, and a great husband.
Speaking of that, your father, Gustav, 5 American grandchildren and 3 great-grandchildren, because of the survival and the courage of this family, the Kleinmans live on.
Not only that, in 1947, by that time, my sister was married in England and had 2 children. Judge Barnett somehow managed to bring her and the family to New Bedford. And in the early days, they lived with us. And he eventually was able to get a job for my sister's husband, Richard. And her claim to fame in the United States was she loved the United States because she always kept saying, I came to the United States with a husband and 2 children, and I ended up with a family of 20.
Now, this book, The Stone Crusher by Jeremy Dronefield, is dedicated to you, Kurt, in memory of your entire family. Knowing when you look at that page early on in this book, on this page, it says, to Kurt, in memory of Gustav, Teeny, Edith, Herta, and Fritz. What does that mean to you?
I tell you, I was not aware of that, and I was not aware of it until I opened my own book and opened the leaf and saw the dedication to me. The only thing I can say, it brought tears to my eyes.
What do you want to tell? You know, WBGO is a worldwide jazz radio station, public radio station. What do you want to tell the world about either the Holocaust, your family, the book, what do you want to say to them?
It's almost difficult for me to describe my gratitude to Jeremy Dronefield for putting that together and writing this book. It's beautifully written. It's amazing how he intersperses the memories of myself or my sister among the situation of my father and brothers in the and brother in the concentration camp. I think it's outstanding reading in spite of many of the other books that I've read about the Holocaust. There's something about it and the way it reads, the humility of some of the stories, the courage of both my father and my brother. It's almost difficult for me to either interpret it or even understand how they were able to have that kind of courage. I'm not sure that I would have had it growing up and being in a similar type situation.
Kirk Kleiman, Diane, his wife Diane, what a pleasure to sit down here to talk to you about The Stone Crusher. I'm sorry I missed the pancakes this morning, but I think you probably didn't want me to eat all the pancakes.
No.
Here.
If I had known you liked pancakes, all it would take an extra handful of powder to make them and so on, I would have gladly made them for you and let you enjoy them.
I certainly appreciate that. I know so much emotion, so many mixed emotions go through this terrific book about your wonderful family. My sympathy goes out to you for your mother and your sister. But what a heroic story about the rest of your family. And thank you so much for sitting down with us, taking some time, and sharing your life story.
I definitely want to thank WBGO and you for coming here and doing the interview, just sitting here with you to discuss the situation. And I just can't express my feelings any more than say thank you very much.
61 years of marriage between Diane and Kurt. We wish you many more and continued success and continued good health to both of you.
Thank you very much for coming.
It was nice meeting you and the opportunity to do this, and you've got a great radio station.